Welcome to the No Illusions Podcast, episode one, actually, for November 13th, 2009. For those of you that haven't been reading the blog lately and you're wondering what the hell's going on, let me give you a quick overview and then we'll get straight into my interview with Fiona Patton from the Australian Sex Party. That's not like a Tupperware party, that's a political party. As some of you regular listeners may know, I've been doing the G'day World podcast for nearly 5 years. Started it in November 2004. Where it was kind of a tech-related show, tech news. It's obviously changed a lot over the years. And I decided it was time to rebrand and relaunch the show that better reflected the current focus of the show. So from henceforth, it will be known as the No Illusions Podcast with Cameron Riley. I call it No Illusions because that's basically what the show's all about this day. Let's not have any illusions about who we are and what we're doing, how our country and our planet is being run. We'll be investigating politics, religion, philosophy, socioeconomic policy, corporate governance, you name it. And it's all about let's get to the truth of what's really going on here. Let's not allow ourselves to live under any illusions. The No Illusions Podcast, this is episode one. It's a new day. The new URL for the show is noillusionspodcast.com. Still on the podcast network. You can still get there by going to g'dayworld.com, the old URL. But there'll be rebranding and all that kind of stuff happening over the next few weeks. There's also a new design on the blog page. Love to get your feedback on that. Have had mixed reviews. Some people love it, some people hate it. So let me know what you think and we'll fix it as we go along. Anyway, enough of the intro. Let's get on with the interview. For those of you who heard the G'day World show a couple of weeks ago, by the way, I did nearly 400 interviews on G'day World over the last 5 years. So a lot of interviews. But I did one a few weeks ago with a young girl called Rebecca who run the Gay Marriage Oz Twitter account. I think that's A-U-S at the end, not O-Z. And she told us she's a 16-year-old lesbian girl who is using her Twitter account to try and promote the cause of equality for LGBT folks in Australia. And we talked a little bit on that show about this new political party in Australia, the Australian Sex Party. And we read through the policies and said, wow, that sounds like a great party, actually. That's a great platform that they have. In fact, out of all of the political parties in Australia, I have to say that the Australian Sex Party platform has the policies that most reflect where my head is at. So I reached out to them, asked if we could do a story on them. And the founder of the sex party, Fiona Patton, got in touch and I had a chat to her earlier today. Well, Fiona, thanks for coming on the show. Why don't you give us a quick introduction to the party, the political party that you founded, the Australian Sex Party?
Thanks, Cameron. Yes, we founded the Australian Sex Party we started in November last year and we were officially recognised by the Electoral Commission in August of this year, and it's really a party that's platform is around sex, gender, and sexuality. And it was remarkable when we started thinking about this platform, just how broad that can be, and how sex, gender, and sexuality can be part of so many parts of our lives and so many parts of politics.
Why do we need a political party that represents our sexual nature specifically, though?
Look, I think our sexual nature is definitely overlooked by politicians. And we're certainly feeling, I mean, me, as a person who's worked as a lobbyist for 20 years, I mention the word sex to many politicians and they start giggling. And it's a pretty innate part of our lives, yet it's not treated as such. And we still have, inequality under the law regarding sexuality. We still have a lot of gender discrimination. And we still have enormous censorship purely on the grounds of sex and sexuality. So I think that there was a role for a voice like ours in Parliament today. And frankly, I feel that a lot of politicians are becoming more and more conservative around these issues and starting to kowtow a lot more to the religious right, with the sense that they can give them a good block of, of an 8% vote.
Countering that, I read recently that there's about 4 million Australian adults who regularly access adult material. I think there was a study by La Trobe Uni. I assume you're familiar with that.
Yes, I am, Cameron. And you know, there is 4 million adults, and our current communications minister is proposing a mandatory filter of adult sites. So, you know, it's another great example of how out of step our politicians today are with the community. And the community has a pretty relaxed attitude to sex and sexuality, but our politicians seem to be going, sadly, in the opposite direction.
And, of course, opposing the internet filter is one of the main policies of the Sex Party, isn't it?
It certainly is, and it was probably the final straw. I mean, we have more censorship now than we did 20 years ago, and then to hear a government making a proposal that we would have a government-sanctioned mandatory filter that was that maintained a secret blacklist that was maintained by government, that was just, you know, for want of a better term, it was a bridge too far, and we really had, someone had to stand up and say something.
And I believe that you are running in the coming by-election for the seat of Higgins, recently freed up by the resignation of former Treasurer Peter Costello. And one of your opponents in that election is the architect of the internet filtering legislation, Clive Hamilton.
Yes, you know, there was many reasons to run in Higgins, and certainly to give us, the Australian Sex Party, an opportunity to experience polling and, I guess, to get some experience in electioneering. And I think to gauge whether the community felt issues like gay marriage, issues like sex education, issues like abortion were important. But then to have Clive Hamilton standing, I mean, someone had to stand up and argue against his position, and the Australian Sex Party decided to do that. We just had the ballot draw, and we're number two on the ballot, so when the people of Higgins go in to vote, they can we're right at the top of the ballot.
And the seat of Higgins is obviously some of the leafy, wealthier suburbs of Melbourne, Toorak, etc. What do you think the profile of the Australian Sex Party is in that area at the moment?
In some parts, probably quite good. It's becoming quite a diverse community. There's a very large gay community in the seat of Higgins. And while there is that kind of, you know, blue rinse set, certainly that have a good stronghold in the areas of Toorak, a lot of those people, I think, really value their privacy. I think they really value, they don't like seeing government intervention in their lives. And I think we can certainly present the argument that there is becoming far too much government intervention in our lives. There's real wowserism entering politics, and you just have to look at Kevin Rudd, who does these doorsteps from the church and is giving the keynote address to the Australian Christian lobby. And I think that while people might be socially or might be economically conservative, I think, you know, some of our issues will resonate with that community. Certainly Viagra on the PBS.
and we all know that secretly behind doors, all of these rich old white people are just incredibly skanky and kinky, right?
Probably more scary than we can ever imagine.
I totally agree with you. It'd probably creep us all out if we knew what was going on in their bedrooms.
That's exactly right, and it's quite often it's the ones that protest so much that you think, oh right, you've got some really funny peccadillos in there. But yeah, I think, you know, thinking back to my grandmother, who, if she was still alive, would be in her 90s and would be one of the true eight people set, she supported prostitution law reform. because she, while she might not want her granddaughter doing it, she certainly felt that it was something that needed to be regulated and needed to be available, and it was a fact of life. And I think a lot of conservative people think that way. And, I mean, Peter Costello was just going kind of to this other mad level where he was supporting the Catch the Fire ministry, which was, you know, they blamed the bushfires on abortion law reform. And, you know, he's front and centre giving video endorsements to this ministry. And I'd have to say, I don't think that would have sat very well in the leafy suburbs of Toorak either.
Yeah, it's sickening and pathetic. And I should point out that we mentioned Clive Hamilton before, and he's actually running as a Greens candidate, which is just bizarre. I don't know.
Oh, look, I've had two calls from the Greens. I haven't actually returned their calls yet because no doubt they're looking for preferences. And you think, you know, as much as, you know, personally I support so much of the Greens' social issues and social platform, how can they, where are they going? And I, with people like Clive Hamilton, and they've picked up another one, there's Kathleen Malsan here who's another Green candidate for the state of Victoria, and she wants to outlaw prostitution and recriminalise it. And she's got this sort of extreme feminist anti-sex position, and as does Clive, and one wonders why the Greens are taking on candidates like this, and are they trying to appeal to a much broader part of our community, or are we really seeing them move further towards the right?
Yeah,
or as with Clive, you know, that he, I think Clive just does that full circle. He's so far left, he's nudging up the arses of the extreme right.
So, you know, the choices that voters have in Higgins, you know, we've got, you know, one of Peter Costello's proteges, Kelly McGovern.
Kelly O'Dwyer.
You know, terrible. Clive Hamilton, just like probably the most evil man in the country today by many people's, metrics.
Or
you. And I want to just take a quick run down your list of policies.
Great.
You know, one of the things I've said on this show for quite a few years now is there is no political party in this country that represents me, that represents my views and my issues. And it was only on this show a few weeks ago when we were doing an interview with a young 16-year-old lesbian girl who is running the Gay Marriage Oz account on Twitter, arguing for equal rights for LGBT folks.
Good on her.
And we got talking about the Australian Sex Party. We went through your policies on the show, and I was saying, wow, you know, here's finally a political party in this country that actually represents intelligent people. Let's run through them quickly. So censorship, you want to bring about the establishment of a national classification scheme for non-violent erotica, which I know is something you've been working on in your work with the Eros Foundation for decades.
That's right. Look, you know, I mean, currently, in every state in Australia has a different censorship law. And in every state in Australia, with the exception of the territories, it's illegal to sell an X-rated film. It's legal to sell at the equivalent in a magazine. And, of course, then with computer games, it's gone totally the opposite direction. So we need a national scheme. It's ridiculous in the 21st century that we are still having this debate about whether states, that states should have different laws. But, you know, we'd like to see a national scheme. We'd also like to see R-rated computer games and X-rated computer games. I mean, why can you have an R-rated video but not an R-rated game? It makes no sense.
Absolutely. And we've got actually the big computer game launch coming up in Australia, don't we? That's a good example of this.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, again, I was having a conversation today about, you know, Amazon.com, which sells, you know, all of the games that have been refused classification in Australia. Now, because that site sells RC material, should that site be blacklisted? Now, my reading is yes, it should be. By having an ad for RC content, that makes that page RC or refused classification. You know, I actually think the idea of government censorship is a bit crazy. Government classification, so, you know, informing consumers is actually a good thing to do. But that's about as far as government should go.
Informing but not banning.
That's right.
Unless obviously there is, you know, people, or in particular children, have actually been hurt in the production of it. In the case of adults, you know, non-volitional participation.
That's right.
Absolutely. No one's disagreeing that they should be against them.
Exactly. And, I mean, those things are a crime already. You know, it's all this sort of talk about the internet filter to stop child porn. And you think, actually, child porn's illegal under the Crimes Act and under numerous other pieces of legislation. You know, what we should be doing is backing up our police so that they can really address and attack the producers of child porn, not trying to say we're going to filter child porn. I mean, you know, that almost seems like, you know, I know they don't, but it's almost like we're condoning it. We just don't want to see it. Well, really, we should be attacking it.
Yeah, we should be working with if it's hosted offshore, working with international authorities to have it taken down and have those people, you know, prosecuted. Let's keep running through your policies. Do you want to overturn the ISP filtering, obviously, which we've talked about, which is terrific.
Yep.
In terms of sex education, you want to bring about the development of a national sex education curriculum?
Exactly. We would like to see compulsory sex education on a national curriculum throughout Australia that started when you went to school. And, well, sex education should never end, but your formal education would finish when you left school. Currently, some very good sex education, but others teach it badly and others don't teach it at all. And in the 21st century, we need to... In my high school, I learned how to spell fallopian tube. I think that was my sex education. you know, and education needs to incorporate the internet, how to become safe citizens on the net. It needs to incorporate relationships. It needs to incorporate negotiating, be it sex or safe sex. It needs to include a whole raft of things. You know, reduce violence, probably reduce sexual violence in our community, probably reduce STIs in our community, and probably make us all happier and healthier human beings.
Yeah, like I think that makes so much sense. I mean, I've got twin boys that are about 9. They've been on the PC since they were 4. They've been on the net since they were probably 5. And, you know, they're gonna have access to all this kind of stuff. We need to have it factored into our society. It's not something we can stick our heads in the sand about.
Well, that's right. And, I mean, the notion of, I would say, you know, forget the filter, because I want to protect our children's rights by ensuring that they have freedom of speech. But we need to educate them about how to safely travel around the internet.
Yeah, and educate them about what teabagging really is.
No, I wish I didn't know that.
As I heard Bill Maher say on his TV show the other day, you know, traditionally teabagging was a homosexual practice involving dropping your testicles into somebody's mouth, and the Republicans took the term and turned it into something gross and disgusting. Let's keep running through your policies. Equality, to enact national anti-discrimination laws, making it illegal to unfairly discriminate against people or companies on the basis of job, occupation, profession, or calling. We don't already have that in place?
No. Against them on the grounds of their age or their gender or their sexuality or their religion. But you can discriminate against them on the grounds that they're a sex worker or they're a politician or they're a used car salesman. And what we're finding is, particularly in the sex industry, is so stigmatised. So a woman who might be a burlesque dancer or a pole dancer or a man who might be a sex worker will find that newspapers charge triple for them to advertise, and the plumber will probably charge double to go to a brothel than they will to go to a normal home. And this is really common practice. And I think just further stigmatises certain parts of our community. And from our point of view, it stigmatises sex still. And it's, I think something like this would really address these very unfair practices that we're existing today.
Fiona, your signal's getting very wobbly and dropping out.
Sorry, Cameron.
That's all right. I'm missing a bit of what you're saying there. If you can move closer to a window or something, maybe.
Yes, let me try. I'm trying to stay plugged in and talking about that.
Whereabouts are you?
I'm in the...
Hello?
Out for the Steve Higgins...
Right, no, you dropped out altogether there. But anyway, let's keep going and see how we go. You want to create mandatory equal numbers of women in the Senate and the state upper houses?
Yeah, I think society would be a far better place if Parliament had equal numbers of men and women. I have certainly found as a lobbyist that talking to female politicians, generally speaking, I get far more sense out of than when I speak to some grey-suited man who starts giggling when I mention the word sex. I think in society, I mean, you look at the boardrooms where less than 10% of board appointees are women, that we really need to change that imbalance. And I think changing that imbalance will improve our society. And so we've got to work towards having equal numbers of men and women in the Senate. Other countries have quotas on this, which is interesting.
I totally agree. I'd also like to see some mandatory numbers around Indigenous representation.
Wouldn't that be fantastic? And excellent policy.
Mm. Let's keep going. You want equal rights in all areas of the law for gay, lesbian and transsexuals. We've seen a number of surveys over the last couple of years saying by far the majority of Australians are in support of gay marriage in this country, and yet our politicians still won't touch it.
That's right, because the Australian Christian lobby tells them not to, and they're maintaining this collusion with those religious organisations, those conservative groups. I agree that 90% of Australians, the vast majority do, and I have a sister who's gay. And she and her partner have had a child. Now, Kirsty can't adopt that child. Under the Tax Act, she seemed to be responsible for my niece, but she can't adopt her or have any sort of legal role in my niece's life. Under the Tax Act.
That's even more backwards than the United States. I've got several friends, gay couples in the United States that have adopted several children. Oh, we're even more backwards than the US. I mean, that's disgraceful.
Yeah, it is disgraceful. And I think it certainly leads us on to that kind of getting religion out of politics.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we do that. One area could be is let's get rid of the tax exemption for churches. But there does, I think, the US does have a clear separation of church and state, although, I'm not sure how successful that is. But we really do need to address the fact that a lot of our politicians do not represent the people who elected them. They represent a very small group of people who they think actually get them into Parliament.
I agree, and just skipping through your policies here, another one that we've talked about on this show quite a lot over the last year, you want to convene a royal commission into child sexual abuse in the nation's religious institutions. We had Dr. Wayne Chumley on this show a couple of months ago talking about sex abuse in Catholic institutions in this country. He said he believes that the tally would be somewhere in the vicinity of 30,000 victims over the course of the last 4 or 5 decades.
Oh, my God. I mean, I think at the moment the number's standing around 600 convictions of church employees being found prosecuted for child sex abuse. Now, can you imagine if the adult industry had that sort of record? There would be a royal commission. We would be closed down.
It would be
We would be shut down. Mm. And the fact that the church has this extraordinarily bad reputation that's been proven in the courts, and they're still allowed to say it's all right, we'll just take care of that ourselves. And I don't think they are. And as your former guest is saying, 30,000 victims.
And of course, we know that the Irish government recently, a couple of months ago, concluded a 10-year study into Catholic sex abuse, child sex abuse in Ireland, and they determined that it was endemic. endemic and just a plague. And yet Wayne Chalmers again was telling us that there was a suggestion to the Senate a couple of months ago that there should be a royal commission, and they declined to take it forward.
Yeah. They're scared of the Catholic Church. And so 30,000 victims go unheard, or predominantly unheard, because Bishop Pell is good mates with Kevin Rudd. I think it's important, and I think if the Irish government can undertake such a commission or such an investigation, I think it's pathetic that the Australian government can't do the same.
I agree. I just want to quickly run through the rest of your policies. I won't ask you to comment, but this is just so people listening at home know that this isn't a stunt party, as I've seen suggested quite a lot in the mainstream media, that your policies are, I think, incredibly sound and reflect the views of certainly many listeners of this show and many people I know on Twitter and Facebook. You want to overturn racist laws that ban Aboriginal people from possessing erotic and sexual media in the Northern Territory, ensure the sexual rights and freedoms of the disabled and the elderly, enact national pregnancy termination laws along the same lines as divorce law, and in Queensland in particular, this has been a big issue in the last couple of months. The listing of Viagra, Cialis and other drugs used to treat sexual dysfunction on the pharmaceutical benefit scheme. Overturn restrictions on aid to overseas family planning organisations that reference abortion. Convene a Royal Commission on Child Sex Abuse, I mentioned. Develop global approaches to tackling child pornography which focus on detection and apprehension of the producers of the material. Ensure that the introduction of paid maternity leave is fair and equitable for small businesses. Abolish sex slavery and sexual servitude by introducing non-morality-based immigration policies. And ending the tax-exempt status for religions, all of which I think are terrific sound policies. The only thing I'd like to see in there that isn't is legalisation of marijuana, which is, again, just one of those ridiculous laws.
Yeah.
There's no medical evidence that says that marijuana is even as bad for you as alcohol, let alone worse for you. The vast majority of Australians are in support of legalisation of marijuana, or something like 50% of Australians smoke it on a regular basis, and I'm not one of those, and yet I'm saying this is just one of those ridiculous laws that it should not be there. It's just a disgrace.
Exactly.
In 2009.
I think on the sort of like on that, in that over, you know, that sort of one of the other broad platforms that I'd love to see the Sex Party really have is less government intervention in our lives, and be that around, you know, criminalising recreational drug use, or, you know, introducing a mandatory internet filter on, you know, on what Australians can and can't see and view. I think government intervention is getting to a mad, mad, mad level.
And I remind people that, you know, the people of Australia, and again, I wasn't one of them, but the majority of Australians voted the Rudd government in and threw out the Howard government in the hope that the Rudd government were going to be the good guys. But of course,
that's right.
They've turned out across the board to be just as bad, if not worse. We definitely need some of the minor parties to be, and I'm talking about the non-Christian fundamentalist minor parties, to be given balance of power in all the states of the country. Let's just talk quickly. Have you got a few more minutes? I want to talk about your background a little bit.
Thanks.
I believe you're a former fashion designer and a former sex industry worker.
Yes. I must say that the fashion industry is the meanest and bitchiest and toughest industry to be involved in. You know, really, the sex industry, it's like, you know, it's like Woodstock. It's so beautiful and luck friendly.
And tell me about your involvement in the sex worker industry. I guess that's something that is still a little bit taboo. People don't talk about it a lot in Australia. It certainly has a perception that's perpetuated by the media that it's full of drug addicts and violence, and the women who are sex workers are only there because of bad circumstances. They're forced into these situations. Tell us about your perspective circa 2009.
Right. What you see on the streets and see it in St Kilda, or you see it in Darlinghurst, or you see it up in Fortitude Valley, or you see that sort of street work, to me, that's not the sex industry. That's actually the drug industry. and those are people in there to support a drug habit. The 95% of people who work in the adult in the sex industry or in prostitution services work in brothels and in escort agencies. 60% of them are supporting the family. And I think about, it's now about 20% are studying as well, are studying, either full-time or part-time. It's not this sort of desperate drug addled, illiterate woman who is the face of the sex industry. It might be the face that a lot of people see because they're the ones on the, a lot of people on the street are really drug affected. But the vast majority of people are doing it so that their kids can go to a good private school or a good school so that they can afford to take their family on holidays or they can afford to study. It's a very different face, and really, it's having sex, it's not going and beating up people in the boxing ring, it's not going and, slaughtering cows in an abattoir, it's providing sex to consenting adults, and yes, there's still a lot of stigma to that, and particularly for women who would be willing to have sex for something other than love, but yet most women in it choose it for a very rational reason, and most women say that their work is not the problem, it's trying to tell people what they do that's the problem.
And of course, you were the founder of the Eros Corporation, which is the representative body for the adult retail and entertainment industry, quite a number of years ago, in the early 90s, I think.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We founded it in 1992, and it was... in a response to the likes of Reverend Fred Nile and groups who had become very organised in their opposition to the adult industry. And we kind of looked around and went, it's probably time that we got organised as well. And we realised that, particularly in those initial days, that the opponents of the adult film industry were the same opponents of the adult entertainment and services industry. So yes, we formed the Eros Foundation in 92. Since then, we've kind of moved away from prostitution and are really focusing on online and on retail, purely because we've seen a lot of law reform in prostitution, which has been great.
And of course, I mean, the adult retail and entertainment industry, as we mentioned before, has a huge amount of support in the Australian population, but it's still one of those things that, I mean, I find it does get talked about a lot more amongst my circle these days. People, including women, are happy to talk about porn. And the one question is always, why isn't there any good porn for women? Can you answer that question while we have you, Fiona?
Let's legalise the production of it in Australia. Certainly, censorship does not make for better porn for women. And yes, there's some sexist material out there. But in Australia, it's still illegal to make an X-rated film. It's legal to film people having sex. It's legal, to take photographs. It's legal to have sex for money. But it's still illegal to produce adult material. And I think if it was legal, we would see far more women getting involved and we would see far better material. And I have to say, I think, I guess from someone who's been involved in this industry for 20 years, I think there's a lot more stuff that's good for women, and there's a lot more women in the industry than I saw when I got involved 20 years ago. So we have seen changes, but, as they say, we've still got a long way to go.
And just finally, you mentioned your grandmother before. That wasn't Jessie Street, was it?
Well, Jessie Street was my great auntie. She was on my grandfather's side. And a great, huge advocate for women's rights. I think she was one of the people who helped establish the now existing UN. And she worked with sex workers, which was just this amazing coincidence. She, of course, was trying to save them and get them out of the industry, where I'm probably doing the opposite. But I suspect if she was still alive today, we'd have some pretty feisty conversations about that.
But she was a great civil rights advocate in Australia in the early 20th century and fought for rights for Indigenous Australians. She was a terrific lady. So you come from very good stock, Fiona.
Yeah, I do feel, she's certainly someone that, is a challenge to live up to, that's for sure.
Thank you very much for chatting with us. I'll let you get on with your commitments in Melbourne. Best of luck on the 5th of December, I think the by-election is. Is that right?
That's it. Thanks very much, Karen. I really appreciate the time you've given me.
And sexparty.org.au for people who want to catch up on your policies and your progress. Have a great afternoon, Fiona.
Thanks, Cameron.